Today we're going to put together everything we've done for the last several lectures. So recall, we spent several lectures learning how to compute cross-sections or decay rates, some of the main observables of interest. And we did that in a few steps. So the first thing we did was we related cross-sections and decay rates to amplitudes or matrix elements. And then using the LSE reduction formula, we saw how to compute matrix elements in terms of vacuum expectation values of time ordered products of fields. And so there's another terminology sometimes you hear used to refer to this object. These objects are often called endpoint functions or Green's functions. Really, the reason they're called Green's functions is not because they're the inverse of some differential operator. It's really just by analogy because, as we saw at the end of the last class, in the free theory, the two-point function is a Green's function. In general, endpoint functions are not Green's functions in the same sense. But it's still sometimes referred to that. So I may, in the future, sometimes use that terminology. But it's really just referring to the same object that we've been studying all week. And the next step was we related these endpoint functions in the Heisenberg picture in an interacting theory by going to the interaction picture. We related these to Green's functions or endpoint functions in the free theory. And finally, we saw using Wick's theorem that we could relate endpoint functions in the free theory to the two-point function, or in other words, the Feynman propagator. And so what we're going to do today is put this all together. So we discussed each of the steps. And what we're going to do today is see how we can basically all at once go directly from the matrix element to the Feynman propagator. So we're not going to do that all at once. So first we're going to see how to jump from here to here, how to relate these using a graphical technique developed by Feynman that is entirely equivalent to what we've done so far, but in practice, much easier. So first, we're going to relate these two objects using Feynman diagrams, and then we're going to go one step further and relate these two objects. And finally, we're going to go all the way to the matrix elements using Feynman diagrams. So what a technique we're going to describe is a procedure for basically drawing pictures or diagrams to capture key parts of this calculation. So the technique of Feynman diagrams is a prescription for which type of diagrams to draw, depending on which object you're trying to compute and which theory you're interested in, as well as a prescription for associating mathematical expressions with each of the diagrams. And so you can set up your calculation just by the first step in the calculation is really just drawing the diagrams, and then you can associate mathematical expressions with them and finally compute them. So that's what we're going to see how to do today. Well, not the last part. How to evaluate the diagrams is something we're going to postpone, but we will see how to write down a mathematical expression for each of the diagrams. Okay, so the simplest example is if we just try to use Feynman diagrams to compute a endpoint function in the free theory. So let's look at an example. So one of the simplest non-trivial examples we can look at in the free theory, or equivalently in the interaction picture, is the four-point function. And so Wick's theorem tells us that the time ordering of this product of operators is equal to the sum of all contractions normal ordered. And if we take the vacuum expectation value, only terms that survive are the completely contracted combinations of operators. So the only terms that will survive here will be the terms where these operators are completely contracted. And there are, well, we can contract these in a number of ways. We could contract 1 with 2, 3 with 4. We could also contract 1 with 3 and 2 with 4. Or we could contract 1 with 4 and 2 with 3. There's three possible contractions. Those will give us three terms using Wick's theorem. So this is equal to delta 1, 2, delta 3, 4, plus delta 1, 3, delta 2, 4, plus delta 1, 4, delta 2, 3, where I'm introducing the notation that delta ij is equal to the Feynman propagator of xi minus xj. Just a shorthand notation. It's a propagator from the point x, y, I to xj. OK, so what we want to do next is associate a diagram with each term in this expression. And the basic procedure is we're going to associate a line with a propagator so that this, for example, this first term, has a propagator from the point 1 to 2 and a propagator from the point 3 to 4. So each of our space-time points is associated with a point on our diagram, and each of the propagators is associated with a line between the corresponding points. So this diagram corresponds to this expression with that relation between lines and propagators. And similarly, this diagram for this term has a propagator from 1 to 3. So I draw a line from 1 to 3 and similarly from 2 to 4. And the last term. As follows. So these are the diagrams associated with this expression. And so to use Feynman diagrams to calculate endpoint functions in free theory, there's not much more to it than this, because by Wick's theorem, endpoint functions in the free theory are always just going to be the sum of terms, sums of products of propagators. So all the diagrams will look something like this. And it's not very difficult to go from one to the other. So one comment about something I've done in this case that I'm going to continue doing is that I've kept the points, the space-time points, in my diagram in the same place in each of the diagrams. I do that just because it makes it easier to tell by looking these diagrams are all different. So this diagram looks different from this diagram. The lines are going horizontally instead of vertically. It's easy to tell because these are different because I kept the space-time points in the same place. If I relabeled things, I could draw two diagrams that were actually different, that look the same. It can get confusing if you do it that way. So I recommend against that. OK, but we see that, if we wanted to draw the diagrams for a endpoint function in the free theory, we just would draw the space-time points and look at all possible ways of connecting them in pairs. So that's a simple procedure that's equivalent to Wick's theorem. So we've done this first step. Just easiest, but it will give us some ideas for how to do this next step, how to write down a set of Feynman rules for which diagrams to draw and what expressions to associate for the endpoint function in the interacting theory. So let's do that next. So the procedure we're going to take is we're going to look at some examples. So we know how to calculate these things. We have all the ingredients about how to calculate these things. So we're going to look at an example the calculation of how we would write down an expression for this. And we'll see what type of diagrams will result. And we'll try to generalize based on our experience with some examples. OK, so the simplest non-trivial endpoint function in a interacting theory is not the four-point function, but rather the two-point function. So let's look at the two-point function in an interacting theory. And we saw last time that we could write this as in the interaction picture as a time-ordered product of the interaction picture fields with an exponential of I integral for y times the interaction Lagrangian divided by denominator and for concreteness I'm going to specify a interaction Lagrangian for essentially the rest of the lecture. We'll choose our interaction Lagrangian to be minus lambda over 4 factorial y to the fourth. Y. So this is a theory where the scalar field can interact with itself. OK. So we've got two expressions here, the ratio of two expressions that look very similar. So we've got a numerator that has an extra factor of phi 1 and phi 2, and also a denominator. So let's focus on the numerator first. And we will come back to what the denominator does after we've understood the numerator. So the numerator in order to evaluate the numerator, we're going to have to expand the exponential. So if we expand the exponential, the numerator becomes the first term is just basis of the Feynman propagator. The next term has an I integral for y of minus lambda over 4 y to the 4 y, just y sub y. And we could go to higher order, but looking at these first two terms will give us some idea of what the general procedure is. And we'll discuss higher order terms a bit later. OK, so this first term, we can very simply write down. It's just an even simpler example than we looked at before. This is just the Feynman propagator. So this term here is just we've got two space-time points that show up on our expression and one propagator between them. OK. So this term has additional field operators, and it involves an integral over an additional space-time point. So our diagram is going to contain three different points, point x1, point x2, and the point y, as well as propagators between them. So to figure out what diagram we should associate with this term, let's use Wick's theorem to try to write it in this form. So this term is equal to, well, there are several possible Wick contractions I could do. So I could do a Wick contraction of phi 1 with phi 2 and contract these four y's among themselves, in which case I will get a expression like, so this minus I lambda over 4 factorial comes out. I'll have a delta 1, 2 from the contraction of phi 1 with phi 2. And I will have an integral d4y, delta yy, delta yy from the contractions of y with themselves. But need to count the number of ways that y, phi y to the fourth can be contracted among themselves. So there's a number of different possible ways we could do that. So phi y, phi y, phi y can be contracted. We could contract the first and second, second and third, contract the first and third, and second and fourth. Or we could contract the first and fourth, and second and fourth. So there are three ways we can contract phi y to the fourth among itself. Basically, we just set x1, x2, x3, and x4 all equal to y. Then we see we get 3 times delta yy squared in this expression. So there should be a factor of 3 here. So there are 3 Wick contractions like this. And the other type of Wick contraction we could get is if we contract phi 1 with one of the phi y's, phi 2 with another one, and 2 of the remaining 2 phi y's with themselves. And in that case, we will get again, a minus I lambda over 4 factorial. And we've got the integral d4y, delta 1y, delta 2y, delta yy. And then we need to count the number of possible Wick contractions that will give us a term of this form. So for the first y, there are for phi 1, there are 4 possible phi y's to choose from. So there's 4 choices for the first contraction and 3 choices for the second contraction. And then the last 2 are forced. So we have here a factor of 4 times 3, or 12. 12 Wick contractions that give us a term of this. So these are the 2 terms we get from this second term in the numerator. And let's associate diagrams with them. So this first term, we have a propagator from the point 1 to 2. And we also have the point y, which has 2 propagators starting that both start and end on y. So the diagram we would want to associate this expression is this one. Similarly, for the other term, we have a propagator from the point 1 to y. So let's draw a line from 1 to y. I also have a propagator from the point 2 to y. So let's connect those by a line. And we have one more propagator from y to y. So we'll draw a line from y to itself.
the integral cannot be represented. There's an integral over d4 by.
It can. So the diagrams, how we're deciding which diagrams to draw is going to be solely based on the propagators that show up in the expression. And what we're going to see is that we're going to be able to develop a set of rules that's starting from this diagram. With the theory specified, we can actually recover this expression. So far, we've decided which diagrams to draw based on the propagators. And so we can recover that information just from looking at the diagram already. And what I'm going to show later is that actually the rest of this information is also in that diagram. And there's a procedure for extracting that information and writing down this expression starting from that diagram.
Also, the coefficients 3 and 12?
Yes, we will recover those.
So the coefficients here, 3 and 4, just mean that size of x1 or x2 or x3.
This coefficient?
No.
The 4 factorial?
The phi 1, phi 2, and the phi by in the Lagrangian.
The phi, yes? These are.
These are just x points, right?
So why here is a space time point, and this 1 indicates that this is the field operator phi of the space time point x sub 1. So these are, in this diagram, you should think of these as space-time diagrams, where these labels are labeling space-time points.
So Wick's theorem still applies even when you have fields in the
interval? Yes. So we can. Okay, so let's try to do that already. So we're ultimately interested in this endpoint function for the interacting theory. So far, we've just been looking at the numerator. So the first set of Feynman rules I'm going to write down won't be as useful, but it will be illustrative. It will illustrate some of the general ideas we're going to use to construct the Feynman rules for the objects we're ultimately interested in, which are the endpoint functions, as well as the matrix elements. And we'll see that actually the Feynman rules for the numerator are not so different from the Feynman rules for the endpoint function that we're ultimately interested in. To generalize our experience a little bit and try to say a few words about motivation, about why I'm doing the particular generalizations I am. So the numerator, I'm referring to this expression here, is say that this is equal to sum of all diagrams with n external points and m vertices at order plus order g to the m plus 1. We're only interested in working up to lambda. Sorry. So lambda is, here's our expansion parameter. And if we have a single interaction term in our Lagrangian, then our diagrams we'll need to write down are the ones at n external points. So the external points are the ones that are not integrated over. So those are the spacetime points that our final expression can depend on. And the internal points are the ones that are integrated over. So we've seen so far that at order lambda is 0, we draw all diagrams with two external points and no vertices. So there's no vertex here. At order lambda, we draw all the diagrams with two external points and one vertex. Got a single vertex here in both of these diagrams. And these are the only possible diagrams we can draw with two external points and one vertex, and the pattern would continue.
And we know that that particular point is a vertex, and 1 and 2 is not because there's an integral over it?
Yes, there's an integral over it, and also this vertex has 4 points meeting at it, and that's related to the fact that we have here a 5 to the 4th iteration.
Is there a physical way to interpret these diagrams we've done for this example in particular?
Yes, we will come back to that in a minute. That interpretation is related to the denominator, and I'll come back to that. We'll discuss the denominator. Okay, so this is which diagrams we should draw. And then to recover the analytic expression, we need a set of rules for how to translate the diagram into an algebraic expression. So our first rule is for each line. From the point x to y, we replace that with Feynman propagator from x to y. That's just how we decided which diagrams to draw. So that's a natural rule. The second rule, yes?
I don't understand very well which are the m vertices. For example, in this example, m.
So the vertex is this.
Yeah, but like in the integral, which is the m, where can I see that I have m vertices in the integral?
So if we expanded this to first order, it's order lambda, and every lambda also comes with an integral.
So the exponent of lambda, that's the one that tells me how much vertices.
That's right. So the number of vertices is the same as the number of the integrals we have, which is the same as the power of the coupling constant. So our second rule is going to seem trivial, and it is for scalar fields. I'm just writing it down so you don't forget it. Next week and the week after, when you're discussing particles with spin, there will be a non-trivial rule here. So for each external point, we include a factor of 1. So we don't do anything. You will do something, and this will be something that there'll be a non-trivial corresponding rule for fermions and gauge bosons that Skang will tell you about later. The third rule is for each vertex. So vertex we've got 4 ends of the lines meeting at a single vertex in this example. We get a factor of minus I lambda and an integral over the corresponding spacetime point. Notice I have not included the factor of 4 factorial here. And more generally, so this is the only rule so far that is specific to our theory. More generally, if L int contained a term it was minus g, say phi to the n1, some other field, phi to the n2, and maybe some third field, phi to the n3, normalized in a particular way, normalized n, a factor of n factorial, if we have a field with n copies, then we would have a rule that have n1 lines of type field type 1, n2 lines of type 2, and n3 lines type 3 going in to a vertex. There would be an allowed vertex of that type, and it would be associated within a factor of minus ig integral b. This one is depends on the theory, but it generalizes. And so with these three rules, we can recover each part of this expression except for the overall numerical factor. And the last rule just accounts for the overall numerical factor. And the last rule requires some explanation. But let me just write down what the rule is first. Last rule is divide by the symmetry factor. S. And S is the number of ways a diagram can be mapped to itself. With the external points held fixed. That last part is key. So it's not the external points have to stay in the same spot.
We divide it to be multiplied.
We divide by it. So. And let me just give you some examples of how to compute this. So for these, examples, so we have two diagrams over here. As a symmetry factor of 2. Because what I can do to this diagram that will leave it invariant is I can basically reflect the line, this line that goes from y to y. And basically, if I do that reflection, the diagram is unchanged. Or I can reverse the switch the two ends of that line. It doesn't change this diagram. And that's the only thing I can do. And so our Feynman rule tells us that the overall numerical factor associated with this diagram is 1 over s, which is 1 over 2. And before, when we computed it using Wick's theorem, we said that this diagram is associated with a factor of 12 over 4 factorial, which where the 12 came from the number of Wick contractions and the 4 factorial was came from the normalization of our interaction term. And 12 over 4 factorial is exactly 1 over 2. So this works. And let's check one more example. Let's check the other diagram. We also had this diagram. And this diagram has a symmetry factor of, we get a factor of 2 because we can do the same exchange of the ends of the lines or reflection of the bottom propagator from y to y. you get another factor of 2 from the exchange of the ends of the line on the top, and we get another factor of 2 from the exchange of the two lines. So 2 from these from exchanging ends of each line, and this is from exchanging the two lines. So the overall symmetry factor is 8, and 1 over 8 is equal to the number of Wick contractions, which is 3, as we computed before, over 4 factorial. This works. And in general, it can be proven that 1 over S is always equal to number of Wick contractions divided by the factorials in the Lagrangian, assuming things are normalized in this way. So if we have a field to the power n, we have to divide the term in the Lagrangian by n factorial. And the reason I'm explaining how to calculate the overall numerical factor using symmetry factors instead of Wick contractions, even though these two ways are equivalent, is that in practice, most symmetry factors are 1 or 2. So once you get used to computing symmetry factors, it's generally much easier than doing the number of Wick contractions. There's often a very large number of Wick contractions, so it can take some time to calculate those. A little bit of practice computing the symmetry factors is easier. Sure. So the first factor of 2 comes from, we can keep the top half of the diagram fixed and basically reflect this bottom line. It doesn't change the diagram, or exchange the two ends of this bottom line.
Like this.
Yes. And we can do the same thing for the top line, keeping the bottom line fixed. And we can also exchange the top and bottom lines.
What's this? Basically, we hold the vertex and we make as many symmetry possible.
So we have to hold the external vertices hold fixed. So the external ones. So the 1 and 2 are the external ones here. They're the ones that are not integrated over, not associated with an internal vertex. These ones have to be held fixed. There, in this diagram, there is no other internal vertex. But if there was, we could exchange those. That's allowed. So that is the numerator. And the only thing we need to do in order to compute the endpoint functions is account for this denominator. So as we'll see, the Feynman rules for the endpoint function are going to be very similar to these Feynman rules, just with actually one small modification that comes from the effect of this denominator. So are there any other questions on the rules we've seen so far?
Yeah, can you explain the formula that you wrote? The number of Wick contractions. What's the factorial?
The factorial are, so it's this 4 factorial in our interaction with Lagrangian. So you may wonder why I chose that 4 factorial. It's because we have a field phi to the fourth. And with that choice of normalization, then we have this relationship between the symmetry factor and the Wick contractions, which turns out to be extremely convenient. So we'll always choose our normalizations like that. Okay. So the denominator looks very similar to the numerator. It's only difference is we have no fields at external points. It's just the time ordered exponential. And so this, write this as expectation value of first term is just 1, next term will be time order of minus I lambda over 4 factorial, 4x, I to the 4, y, higher order terms. And actually, these each term is basically of the same type as we had before, just some product of fields. The only difference is we have no external points. So let's draw the diagrams that we get. So this first term, there's no really good way to draw it. So it's just the vacuum expectation value of no operators, or just the number 1. So I'm just going to write that as 1. No particularly good way to draw this diagram. This order lambda term will have 1 vertex. And so we should draw Feynman diagrams with one vertex and no external points. There's only 1 such diagram. At the next order, we should have 2 vertices and no external points. So there's several different types of diagrams that type. There's one that's basically 2 copies of this diagram. And another one like this, and a 3rd one like this. And so this diagram is basically 2 copies of this diagram. And there's another way we can write this, which is suggestive. We can also write this as a half of this diagram squared. And the reason we need this extra half is because of the extra symmetry we get when we have 2 copies of the same diagram. So if we have 2 copies of this same diagram, we can exchange this entire subdiagram with this subdiagram. That gives us an extra symmetry factor of 2. If we square the same diagram, we won't have that symmetry, so we need to include that factor of half in order to make these 2 expressions equal. And, well, so these 3 terms in particular look like the first 3 terms in an expansion of the exponential of this diagram. And that's not an accident, and we started with an exponential, and it shouldn't be that surprising that we end up with an exponential. And in fact, a nice way to write this denominator is as the exponential of the connected vacuum diagrams. So by a vacuum diagram, I just mean no external points. And by connected, I mean you can travel from any point in the diagram to any other point by traversing a line, and there's infinitely many connected vacuum diagrams, but in general, it will only be a finite number at a particular order. So you see here, there's 3 connected diagrams up to 2nd order, up to 2 vertices. But there'd be more if we went to higher order. And so this I made a plausibility argument. You can actually prove that the only you get exactly these diagrams. And the basic idea is just that, well, any vacuum diagram will have some number of connected components, and we can get all of the diagrams just by multiplying together the unique connected components, and it turns out we'll get the coefficients right as well. We write it like this, as we checked explicitly in this simplest case.
The third diagram is not connected, right?
This is not connected.
But then you can write that as a connected diagram?
So that this term, it comes from the basically the second order expansion here. So if we expand this to zeroth order, we'll just get one. We expand it to first order, we'll get all the connected diagrams. If we expand it to second order, we'll get the product of all connected diagrams. This is the product of this diagram with itself. And so this comes from the second order, this term comes from the second order expansion. And so using similar ideas, we can write the numerator. Which we've already seen, it's just the sum of all diagrams with n connected, n external points and m vertices. So that contains both connected, we've already seen connected diagrams and disconnected diagrams. But a useful way to separate this numerator out is, well, it will be contain some part of the diagram that's connected to the external points. So like this, or this, or something more complicated that's still connected to the external points. And then there's infinitely many diagrams of this type where all parts of the diagram are connected to at least one of the external points. And, well, possibly we'll have some diagram like this multiplying a vacuum diagram, a part that's not connected to the external points. Vacuum diagrams. So all diagrams are of this type. They'll have some part that's connected to the external points, and possibly some part that's not. So it could be multiplied by one, or it could be multiplied by something that's not connected. And so we can write this as the connected part, no vacuum diagrams. And we've seen this is just the exponential of the connected vacuum diagrams. So this factor of the exponential of the connected vacuum diagrams cancels between the numerator and the denominator. I haven't shown that all of the symmetry factors work out, but that's something that can be checked, and it is true that not only just are these, is this a useful way to classify the diagrams, but using this multiplication, we also get all the numerical factors correct. So the only difference, if we were calculating the two-point function instead of the numerator, is that, if we were calculating the two-point function, the vacuum diagrams cancel. So the two-point function, we should only include this diagram and this diagram out of the ones we've considered so far. this other diagram contains a vacuum subdiagram. So this contribution of this diagram will cancel between the numerator and the denominator. So going back to Rick's question, that this diagram basically contains information about how the vacuum interacts with itself, and is not relevant if we're looking at a Green's function in the acting theory. And of course, we could go to higher order and there'd be more diagrams. So the Feynman rules for the endpoint functions are almost the same. I'm not going to write them all again. I'm just going to make a few small modifications to the rules we wrote before. The rules we wrote before for the numerator are correct, but they're less useful than the ones I'm about to write. So for the endpoint function, are just so the only thing that change so this is equal to sum of all diagrams with no vacuum subdiagrams. And everything else is exactly as before. So that's the only effect of the denominator, just to remove that set of diagrams. Are there any questions on this? Yes.
I don't understand why that loop diagram that you made, the third one. Yeah.
This one?
No, the next one.
This one.
Yeah. Why is that a first order term when if you have both points Y and Z?
This is a second order. So at first order, there's only one diagram. I've gone to second order here. At second order, there are three diagrams.
But when you wrote exponential of that thing, doesn't that mean that?
This is an exact statement. So this is true at all orders. So if we go to up to at first order, there's a single connected vacuum diagram. At second order, there are two connected vacuum diagrams. At third order, there's probably a lot more than that.
What are we doing with the diagrams that are not connected? So for instance, the second diagram that we made was not connected. What did you say about that?
That comes from so this is an exponential of this diagram. So at zeroth order, we recover this term. If we expand this exponential to first order, we'll get these three terms, as well as some others. At second order, we will get this term. It comes from a half of the argument of the exponential squared. And that includes a term with this squared. Yes?
Could you re-explain how you factored this into the connected vacuum diagrams and the other ones?
So the idea behind this first line is that a general diagram with two external points can be separated into two parts. It can be separated into a part that's connected to the external points and a part that's not, which maybe that everything's connected, in which case the part that's not is just trivial. But that's the idea here. So we can separate it into some part that's connected. Simplest parts where everything is connected to the external points are these three diagrams. And then there might also be some part that's not connected. So our next task.
Something else.
Yes.
So you said about the physical interpretation of the. Are we able to do it now?
Physical interpretation. So these vacuum diagrams basically tell us how, this is the time evolution operator, and it's, so the denominator is asking what's the amplitude for the free vacuum to time evolve into itself. So each of those diagrams are contributions to that amplitude. So that's the interpretation of vacuum diagrams, is they tell us something about the amplitude for the vacuum to evolve into itself.
Here we're calculating the correlators, essentially, right?
Yes.
So we're writing them as this sum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sum of like, what does the two dots with the line mean? That's my, the two dots with the line and two dots with the line and the curly thing in the middle. Like, physically, can I interpret them somehow? Can I look at them and think of particles or propagating or
so
interacting with something?
In a sense, remember, we can only, these are, in a sense, an artifact of perturbation theory. So there's infinitely many diagrams that will contribute to any process. So can be a way of placing too much interpretation on any one diagram. But like the story you can tell about this diagram is we've got a particle that's propagating from the point x1 to x2. You've got the story you can tell about this diagram is you've got a particle that's propagating from x1 to y, where it's interacting with some other particle that some other pair of particles that, and then it's kind of dangerous to take it too seriously. These are just a part of the calculation, and any physical thing you're going to calculate will involve many diagrams, and in a sense, they're all important. Yes.
Wondering at the beginning, we said that, like, when you drew like the example with the spacetime points 1, 2, 3, and 4,
yes,
have them like all fixed at the same spot each time as you went,
yes,
through the diagram. But then, like for the 1, 2, y case, we like switched them up. So is this?
So in all cases, I kept the external points at the same point.
Okay.
The internal points, sometimes it's just not practical or convenient, or it makes it really, really ugly if you keep those fixed.
Okay.
But I do suggest keeping the external points fixed.
Okay.
Okay. So the next thing we want to do is to extend these ideas to see how to calculate the matrix element using Feynman diagrams. And to do that, we need to recall the LSE reduction formula. So FSI, for the case of 2 to 2 scattering, was this integral of the product for xi, e to the I lambda I, the I dot xi, product over Gordon operators acting on the four-point function. And S was related to M by tracking off the identity and factoring out a overall momentum conserving delta. So our next task is going to see what is the effect of the LSE reduction formula on which diagrams we should consider and what analytic expressions we should associate with those diagrams. We've already learned how to use Feynman diagrams to compute this four-point function. So let's plug in our results into the LSE reduction formula and see what happens. So our four-point function already seen is these zeroth order in the coupling. It's just these three diagrams. And so I'm going to draw a time going upwards. So specifying an error of time is not really useful when we're just talking about the endpoint function. It doesn't play any role. But in when we're talking about scattering, incoming particles and outgoing particles enter in the LSE reduction formula differently. Because this factor of lambda is plus or minus one depending on if it's an incoming or outgoing particle. So specifying which particles are incoming or outgoing is a useful thing to do in this case. So if time is going upward, particles one and two are incoming particles, and three or four are outgoing. Okay, so let's look at in terms one at a time and see what they give us in the LSE reduction formula. So this term is, as we saw before, is delta 1, 3, delta 2, 4. And let's look at this term first. So one thing we notice is that this diagram factorizes. You can write it as product over two different Green's functions, or Feynman propagators, each of which only depends on two out of the four external points. And the LSE reduction formula doesn't contain anything that mixes those external points. So we can consider each half of this separately. So let's just look at first the part of this expression that depends on the points one and three. So I'll define a function f depends just on x1 and x3. It's just the Klein-Gordon operators associated with space-time points 1 and 3. Acting on the Feynman propagator from point x1 to x3. So we can do the integrals in the LSE reduction formula for particles x1 and x3. So since 1 is incoming, it has a positive sign in the exponent. And three is outgoing, it has a negative sign in the exponent. Sorry, this is 1. So I can write this as if I change variables to x1, 3 is x1 plus x3, x1 bar is x1 minus x3, then I can write this as similarly for p's, I can write this as the product of two integrals. So it becomes an integral d4x 1, 3, d4x bar 1, 3. The exponential comes x p1 bar x plus p x bar. And f only depends on x1 minus x3, so it only depends on x bar. And so this is just saying we should do a Fourier transform of f. And we have this extra factor of e bar of e to the I p, p bar times x. And the key point on this calculation is that after I do this change of variables, this integral just gives us a delta. In particular, we can write this as 2 pi to the fourth delta to the fourth of p1 minus p3, or p bar, p1 minus p3, f tilde of p1 plus p3 over 2. So this LSC reduction formula says that there should be a energy momentum conserving delta function associated with this part of the diagram. And basically, all we used in this derivation was that this function f was independent of the other two spacetime points. So it wouldn't really matter what else we put, if it was some more complicated part of the diagram, but as long as we could write the diagram as two disconnected pieces, each piece which only depended on two spacetime points will give us a energy momentum conserving delta function associated with those particles. So this diagram is, well, in the, if you're computing the contribution to FSI associated with this diagram, we'll get an energy momentum conserving delta function associated with each disconnected part of the diagram. So in other words, there's no scattering in this diagram. This is just saying this diagram is only non-zero if the momentum of the outgoing particle 3 is the same as the incoming particle 1, and similarly for 2 and 4. So there's no scattering here. Similarly, this diagram would give us no scattering. And this diagram, in fact, will be 0, because there's no way for a delta of p1 plus p2 to be 0 unless the energy and momentum of both the incoming particles is identically 0. It's not a very interesting case. So what we see is that we get energy momentum conserving deltas from each of the disconnected parts, and diagrams that are not completely connected don't correspond to scattering between all of the particles. So these diagrams, no scattering. Why these deltas tell us there's no scattering, or why we get these deltas?
I see why the deltas tell us there's no scattering.
So if we want this delta to be non-zero, then that tells us that p1 has to be equal to p3, which tells us the energy and momentum of the one of the outgoing particles has to be equal to the energy and momentum of one of the incoming particles. So basically, it was conducted by the. So, if we want to describe scattering, we need to go to higher order and look at a diagram that is completely connected. And the simplest completely connected diagram shows up at the next order. And using our Feynman rules for this diagram has a factor of minus I lambda and an integral over B4Y. This is one vertex. There's no symmetry factor here, so we don't need an overall numerical factor. Got a factor of delta 1y, 2y, delta 3y, and delta 4y associated with each of the lines. And the LSE reduction formula is going to contain Klein-Gordon operators. For example, one acting on the first particle. And that will just give us a minus I delta 4, x1 minus y. And we can use this delta to do the x1 integral. And similarly for x2, x3, and x4. So the Klein-Gordon operators will remove one of the propagators and turn it into a delta. And then we have an integral there that gets rid of that delta. So what we'll be left with, if you look at the contribution to the scattering from this diagram, we get minus I lambda integral d4y. And then we'll have the exponential to the I p1 plus p2, the positive sign because they're incoming, minus p3 minus p4 with the negative sign because they're outgoing, dotted with y. So this is what's left after we apply the Klein-Gordon operators and do the x integrals. And we can do this integral. This just gives us a minus I lambda 2 pi to the fourth. Delta to the fourth, P1 plus P2 minus P3 minus P4. So this is just our overall momentum conserving delta function, which we factored out of our definition of IM. We want this factor to show up in all of our calculations, and we see explicitly here that it does. Okay. So here, contribution to IM from this diagram is minus I lambda. So there's one other point, which is somewhat subtle, and I'll come back to this and explain it in a bit more detail tomorrow. But I just want to briefly explain the idea today. Is related to a process called amputation. So what we saw in this simple example is that the Klein-Gordon operator applied to the Feynman propagator gives us a delta function. Now I want to think a little bit more carefully about this equation here. So in our derivation of the LSZ reduction formula, we made no reference to the interaction picture or the free theory. The LSC reduction formula, well, we made a few assumptions, but it was an exact result. And the M in the LSC reduction formula is the physical mass. Which is not necessarily the same thing as the mass of the particle in the free theory. There could be corrections to the mass coming from the interaction terms. And we'll see, I'll discuss that a bit more tomorrow. But these corrections mean that the mass that shows up in this Feynman propagator is not necessarily the same thing as the mass that shows up in the LSC reduction formula. So what this should be really be is this should be the physical mass, and this one will involve the mass of the free mass of the particle, or the and the way to account for the difference between these two masses, and again I'll say more about this tomorrow, is through a process called amputation. So we've got some complicated diagram. With some corrections on the external legs. What amputation means is we just remove any corrections to the external legs, but we leave together the interior of the diagram without any modifications. So after we amputate this diagram, it will look something like this. So I leave the interior as it was, and I just replace the propagators on the external lines with any decorations they have, just with a simple line or a simple propagator. And so this procedure, as we'll discuss a bit more tomorrow, will account for the difference between the mass in the LSC drought reduction formula and the mass in the Feynman propagator. So that's something we need to do for that reason, these two different masses that show up in our formula. Okay, so together with that procedure, we can generalize what we did and write down the Feynman rules. Yes.
Why do we need to do this application?
So the mass in the LSC reduction formula is the physical mass, and the mass in this Feynman propagator is the mass that shows up in the Lagrangian, which are not necessarily the same thing. And we'll see a relationship between them tomorrow. I'll have a lot to say about this tomorrow. If this is just sort of a preview, it's not a point I can explain in 5 minutes. So please hold on to your question, and I'll come back to that. Okay. So let's write down our Feynman rules for the matrix element. So IM is equal to the sum of completely connected amputated diagrams. And first Feynman rule is that an internal line or the particle that has momentum p is associated with the Fourier transform of the Feynman propagator. So remember, our incoming and outgoing states in LSE reduction formula are momentum eigenstates. So we should associate a factor of our expressions are all going to be in Fourier space.
Wait, so there's going to be an integral over P there and an e to the power IP?
In some cases, I'll come back to that in a second.
Does the internal line represent the Fourier transform of that expression?
This is the Fourier transform of
right.
of delta. External lines are associated with a factor of one. And this is basically because the LSE reduction formula contains these Klein-Gordon operators, which remove the external propagators. The vertex is associated in our case with a factor of minus I lambda. We got here. This depends which vertices are allowed will depend on the form of our interaction Lagrangian. But for the 5-4 theory, this we just have a single vertex associated with a factor of minus I lambda. Fourth, we should impose momentum conservation at each vertex. So for example, if we have a diagram like this, which wouldn't be allowed in phi-4 theory, but if we had a phi-cubed interaction, we could have a diagram like this. This is just a simpler example to illustrate this rule, where our incoming particles have momenta p1 and p2. Outgoing particles have momenta p3 and p4. Well, momentum conservation tells us that the momentum of the particle on this line should have momentum p1 minus p3. So if I add together the incoming momentum is p1, the outgoing momentum is p1 minus p3 plus p3. So momentum is conserved at this vertex. And over here it's conserved because p1 plus p2 has to be equal to p3 plus p4 by overall momentum conservation. Our fifth rule is the same as before. Divide by the symmetry factor. And finally, we should integrate over any undetermined momenta. And so a few comments on where these rules came from. So basically, before we associated Feynman propagators with lines. We're working in position space. Now we're working in momentum space, so we should associate the Fourier transform of the Feynman propagator with our lines, but not the external lines because the LSE reduction formula contains Klein-Gordon operators, which removes those propagators. Rules 3 and 5 are basically just carry over directly from our Feynman rules for the endpoint functions. And we saw a few examples where we got momentum conserving deltas from looking at explicit examples. And rules 4 and 6 basically are the generalization of those examples we looked at. So momentum will always be conserved in the Feynman diagrams. For some loop diagrams, we won't always be able to uniquely determine the momenta of the incoming of the internal particles in terms of the incoming and outgoing external particles. So for example, if we have a diagram like this with incoming momenta P1 and P2, outgoing momenta P3 and P4, momentum conservation is not enough to determine uniquely the momenta of both of the internal particles on the internal lines. So one of them will be undetermined, and we can call that K. And in terms of that undetermined momentum, the rest of the momenta can be conserved, can be determined. So for example, this one has to be, we've got K plus P2 minus P4, using momentum conservation over here to be the same as using momentum conservation over there. And the expression for this, using our Feynman rules, we have two vertices, minus I lambda squared, one undetermined momentum. And in general, the number of undetermined momenta will be equal to the number of loops in the diagram. So we integrate over undetermined momenta, the factor of d4 k over 2 pi to the fourth, integrating over all four components, not just three of them. We have two internal propagators, I over k squared minus m squared plus I epsilon, I over k plus p2 minus p4 squared. And then the last thing we need to do is include the symmetry factor. This diagram has a symmetry factor of 2 coming from the exchange of the internal lines. So I'm allowed to exchange those two lines. That preserves the location of all the external lines. So that's an allowed symmetry. So we have an overall factor of 1/2. And so we'll see in another number of other examples of how to do this in tutorial this afternoon. Are there any questions? Yes.
When you're saying Bose momentum conservation, you mean like put a delta?
I don't mean put a delta. I mean, so what I did here and here is I just looked at, first I labeled the external momenta. Those are determined, and we expect that our matrix element should depend on those. And in this case, using momentum conservation, I was able to uniquely determine what the momentum on the internal line has to be. And I just wrote that on the diagram itself. I could choose which direction the momentum is flowing in. That might change the signs, but it won't change our final expression. But if the momentum is flowing this way, then momentum conservation at this vertex, we've got P1 coming in and P3 going out, and that momentum should be P3 going out plus whatever is here, it's going out here. So we know that this has to be P1 minus P3 in that case. Over here, I needed to choose which one of these was our undetermined momentum that would be integrated over before I could determine the momentum in the other. Any other questions? Okay, I'll see you this afternoon.